It is Monday, September 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Hurricane Irma weakens, but its threat remains. U.S. President Donald Trump honors those who lost their lives on September 11th, 16 years ago, during a ceremony at the Pentagon.
Among the 184 brave Americans who perished on these grounds were young enlisted service members.
And a new genetic discovery may end premature births. It's all ahead. We begin with Hurricane Irma, which has weakened into a tropical storm as it moved over northern Florida and then into southern Georgia. The storm's torrential rains and dangerous surges could produce coastal flooding. The National Hurricane Center warned that swells generated by Irma along the southeastern U.S. coast could still cause life-threatening surf and rip current conditions. Much of Florida began to assess the damage left in the hurricane's aftermath. There was significant flooding in many cities and towns bordering the peninsula states' Gulf of Mexico shoreline, as well as in Jacksonville on the east coast along the Atlantic. Nearly 6 million people were left without power throughout the state. I spoke with VOA's Giselle Tobias, who's in Miami, and asked him to describe conditions in the city.
There are different conditions. There are some places where it was flooding a little bit. So right now they're trying to do a cleanup on those streets. Then we can see some other parts of the city where the hurricane pretty much didn't do much. We can just see right now many trees on the streets, a little bit of trash around the streets. Some traffic lights are not working. We see some traffic lights spray out on the streets. But it's not a devastation as we thought it will be before.
I saw some video yesterday, a pretty dramatic video of water just streaming right through the streets. I don't know what part of Miami it was in. So it sounds like the city has made conditions are, I guess, okay at the moment.
It is okay. One of the good things was we didn't have many precipitation. The rain wasn't as bad as it was in Houston, Texas, for example. We had a few hours of rain. It was not a very strong rain, so the city didn't absorb as much rain to cause a devastation. What you saw, it was the waves from the sea coming into the city, and it happened for a couple hours, and then finally, when Hurricane Irma went away, the sea went back to normal. So right now, the city is just draining out, and it's a process of cleaning right now that we are seeing everywhere.
I know that a lot of residents of Miami evacuated, left. So I would guess that it's fairly quiet there now.
It is. It's a little bit quiet. People was able to get out until today at 10 a.m. That was the time the officials advised for everybody to be able to come back home, or people who would just in their houses to be able to go out and get some food and water. Today, not many people went to work. Most of the restaurants and other companies, hotels, remain closed. But we can see more traffic right now on the streets. People were probably anxious to get out of their houses after 2 days being closed up. So right now, we can see more activity around the city.
And what about stores, like grocery stores? Are they open or are they still closed?
Just right behind me right now, it's a very huge grocery store, and they opened like an hour ago. So a lot of people I can see coming around here trying to get mostly water.
I also understand that the Miami airport, at the moment at least, remains closed.
Yes, it does. It remains closed. Authorities said they will go around the airport. They will check every part of it and make sure it's safe to, again, start receiving planes.
Now, I believe that there are a couple of other storms out there churning in the Caribbean area. Are there concerns that they might head towards Miami?
They're looking at it right now. So far, it's not been a big concerning about them. Authorities say they were looking, keeping an eye on these storms and small hurricanes. But so far, we are not in danger right now.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Giselle, for speaking with me.
It was my pleasure, Sarah.
VOA's Giselle Tobias reporting from Miami. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, I know there's a lot going on.
There is, and there's been a lot of viral videos and photos over the weekend that showed Hurricane Irma striking Florida. You saw the streets of Miami covered in water, like a river running through the city of Miami. But one viral video getting a lot of attention was the hurricane actually sucking the water out of a bay in the Bahamas and leaving it dry. And lots of people shared this video over the weekend where, because of the pressure and the winds, all the water got pushed out. And it's basically a bed of dry land where there should have been a bay of water. Similarly, in Tampa Bay, not as severe as that, but the water levels dropped as the storm came through and the winds pushed it away before the storm surge rode into the city. But lots of people sharing those videos. One instance where something was shared where it wasn't accurate, although it was impressive, came from the White House Director of Social Media, Dan Scavino. He shared a video that was reportedly from Miami International Airport that purported to show the flooding there. It was actually a video from Mexico City's airport that was taken last week when they had heavy rains. So he had to apologize because of that and said that with all the videos and photos coming in, it's hard to keep track of what is real and what's not. But an instance where you can never be too sure what you see on social media. One thing we did see quite a lot of was reaction to reporters out in the storm. You see these shots of the reporters that are getting practically blown sideways by the wind.
They can barely stand up.
And the, you know, the reaction on social media ranges from, you know, hypocrisy to stupidity. They said it's hypocritical of these reporters to tell people to shelter when they're out there putting their lives at risk. And it's just plain dumb. The reporters have responded on social media saying, well, that's our job to go out there so you don't have to. Other than the hurricane trending, which everyone is still talking about, people are also talking about September 11th. Of course, today is the 16th anniversary, as you mentioned, of the September 11th terror attacks. So we're seeing lots of remembrances across social media. Hashtag never forget. United 93, which is the plane that went down in Pennsylvania. Pentagon, World Trade Center, all terms that are trending as people remembering where they were. And something that we've seen over the past few years that happens every September 11th, Ari Fleischer, who was the White House press secretary in the George W. Bush administration, the White House press secretary on September 11th, 2001, for the past few years, he's taken to Twitter on September 11th and live tweeted where he was at each moment on that day. So at 8:51 this morning, he tweeted that that was when he received the first alert. And it's kind of in real time, he takes you through the day, what he was going through, what the president was going through. It's a really unique look at what transpired that day, and it's one that he's able to get out to the world via social media through all those tweets. So you can check that out if you go on Twitter and look for Ari Fleischer.
Yeah, quite amazing. Yeah. All right, well, thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. The UN Security Council will vote on new North Korea sanctions. The Dalai Lama urges Aung San Suu Kyi to resolve the Rohingya crisis. A Taliban car bomber attacks a NATO convoy. And in Somalia, 20 people are killed in three separate attacks, allegedly by al-Shabaab. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Many psychologists say there are six basic emotions that are shared by all humans. They are anger, fear, surprise, disgust, happiness, and sadness. Now, a new study by researchers at the University of California, Berkeley, has expanded that listing. The researchers played over 2,000 emotionally suggestive video clips to more than 800 men and women. They analyzed the group's responses to the videos and were able to identify 27 distinctive human emotions. Among the newly identified emotions are awe, peacefulness, horror, and adoration. The study's senior author, Dr. Keltner, a psychology professor at UC Berkeley, says that the 27 aren't necessarily isolated from each other, but are interconnected to others like smooth gradients of emotion. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, the United Nations Human Rights Chief expresses concerns about the status of Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar. For the first time as president, Donald Trump led the nation in remembering the September 11th attacks on New York and Washington in 2001. Trump marked the 16th anniversary of the worst act of terrorism on U.S. soil in a ceremony at the White House with a moment of silence at 8:40 a.m., the time when a first airliner hijacked by al-Qaeda terrorists crashed into the World Trade Center in New York. A second jet hit the second World Trade Center tower 23 minutes later, and the huge skyscrapers collapsed in flames and smoke soon afterwards. A bugler played the melody Taps at the White House ceremony. In New York, the names of the victims were read out after a moment of silence was held.
Kimberly S. Bowers.
Veronique Nicole Bowers.
Larry Bowman.
Sean Edward Bowman Jr.
Kevin L. Bowser.
Gary R. Bucks.
Trump also attended a remembrance ceremony at the Pentagon, which was hit and badly damaged by another of the four commercial jets seized on that fateful day.
For more than seven decades, the Pentagon has stood as a global symbol of American might, not only because of the great power contained within these halls, but because of the incredible character of the people who fill them. They secure our freedom, they defend our flag, and they support our courageous troops all around the world. Among the 184 brave Americans who perished on these grounds were young enlisted service members, dedicated civil servants who had worked here for decades, and veterans who served our nation in Korea, in Vietnam, and in the Middle East. All of them loved this country and pledged their very lives to protect it. That September morning, each of those brave Americans died as they had lived, as heroes, doing their duty and protecting us and our country.
Vice President Mike Pence traveled to Shanksville, Pennsylvania, where the fourth hijacked plane crashed into a field in 2001. It's believed passengers tried to regain control of the aircraft once they realized their knife-wielding captors intended to steer it toward Washington for another attack, and that the hijackers crashed the plane rather than surrender. The United Nations Human Rights Chief has joined the growing chorus of international voices condemning Myanmar for the wave of violence that has forced scores of minority Rohingya Muslims to flee across the border to Bangladesh. Speaking Monday in Geneva before the UN Human Rights Council, Zayed Raad Al Hussein said his office has received numerous reports and satellite imagery of Myanmar security forces and local militias carrying out extrajudicial killings and burning entire Rohingya villages.
I am extremely concerned about persistent reports of atrocity crimes which are pushing the country very close to a complete breakdown along religious and ethnic lines. Anti-Balaka and ex-Seleka forces, as well as various splinter groups, are responsible for the escalating cycles of reprisal attacks.
The Arakan Rohingya Salvation Army, also known as ARSA, Sunday proclaimed a month-long unilateral ceasefire in an effort to allow humanitarian aid to flow to tens of thousands of Rohingya Muslims fleeing a two-week-old security crackdown in western Rakhine State. Hundreds are believed to have been killed since ARSA launched coordinated attacks against security forces August 25th. The UN estimates nearly 300,000 Rohingya have fled to neighboring Bangladesh, adding to the hundreds of thousands already there living in refugee camps. A spokesman for State Councilor Aung San Suu Kyi, however, is quoted as saying, "We have no policy to negotiate with terrorists." Vikram Nehru, non-resident senior fellow at the Washington-based Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty he's not surprised at the apparent government rejection of the truce.
I think especially given the fact that the recent information is that the ARSA forces are being led by jihadis with links to Saudi Arabia and Pakistan, and has given some credence to the argument that the Myanmar armed forces have been making that these are terrorists. Secondly, the reality is that it is, to be honest, the proposal for a ceasefire is surely very tactical, because the problems within the Rakhine state have really now very little to do with ARSA. ARSA is a very small force. They are not capable of carrying out any series of attacks over a period of time, at this point at least. And the huge flow of refugees from Arakan state into Bangladesh is entirely because of the extremely brutal response of the armed forces, and have really nothing to do with ARSA at this point. I suspect that this was purely a tactical measure by the ARSA group, and a very predictable response from the Myanmar authorities.
You mentioned the humanitarian crisis. Apparently there are reports as many as 300,000, many of them sick or wounded, have arrived just in the past 2 weeks in Bangladesh, putting an enormous strain on humanitarian agencies.
Absolutely. I mean, this estimate of almost 300,000 refugees comes from the United Nations, and therefore one has to give it considerable weight. And that is, first of all, a very large proportion of the total population of Rohingyas within Myanmar. And on the other, I think it is a huge strain. It's a huge strain on Bangladesh, but one can imagine only the strain that the refugees themselves are facing. There is literally nowhere for them to go. There is no sustenance. There is no shelter. There is very little medical help and supplies at this stage.
Rights monitors and those fleeing Rohingya say the army and Rakhine Buddhist vigilantes have mounted a campaign of arson aimed at driving out the Rohingya. This could be a very serious problem for the government.
And indeed, the United Nations Special Rapporteur for Human Rights in Myanmar, Yang He Lee, has just said that she thinks that perhaps over 1,000 people have been killed, if not more. Probably, she argues, that's an underestimate. So really, nobody knows what the depth of the tragedy is in Rakhine state at this point, because nobody is allowed to go there except the Myanmar armed forces themselves. And of course, it's in their interest not to bring out the real facts, but the sheer number of refugees that are entering Bangladesh are testimony to the brutality that is taking place within Myanmar.
That's Vikram Nehru of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He notes that observers see Muslims in this region as ripe for radicalization, given the marginalization they've experienced over the decades. He said that's why it's not surprising jihadists from the Middle East and Pakistan have connected with members of the Rohingya community. He also said the real challenge facing the Myanmar government is the goodwill it's losing in the international community that helped propel the country's reform transition 5 years ago. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. An international team of researchers has identified for the first time 6 genes that determine the length of pregnancy and whether or not a baby is born preterm. Preterm birth is a major cause of infant death and disability. Now, as VOA's Carol Pearson reports, scientists may have clues about preventing prematurity.
15 million babies around the world are born too soon every year. They struggle to breathe, and too many of them die. Those who survive can face complications from prematurity throughout their lives. Now, at last, scientists may have found some clues to what causes this complex disorder. In the largest to date DNA analysis, an international team of researchers looked at the genetic makeup of 50,000 pregnant women. They found 6 genes that seemed to determine how long a baby would stay in the mother's womb. Dr. Louis Moglia coordinated the study. He's the chief investigator of the March of Dimes Prematurity Research Center in Ohio, and he specializes in the care of preemies at Cincinnati Children's Hospital.
For the first time, we have the clues that are going to lead us to rational ways of understanding a woman's risk for preterm birth.
Muglia says scientists have known for a long time that preterm birth involves a combination of genetic and environmental factors. One of the newly identified genes is involved in how the body uses selenium, a mineral found in soil, seafood, and meat. Another finding is that the cells that line the uterus play a larger-than-expected role in the length of pregnancy. This study also showed that the genes which seem to be responsible for the timing of birth were from the mother.
For the first time, we have an idea of what tissue in the mom is the one that's likely driving the risk for preterm birth.
Stacy Stewart, president of the March of Dimes, hailed the study.
Well, we think this is an important breakthrough in finding solutions to end premature birth, which is the leading cause of death for children between the ages of 0 and 5 and the leading cause of disabilities for babies.
The March of Dimes helped fund the study. The study doesn't provide any immediate solutions for stopping preterm birth, but the discoveries may unlock new ways to prevent this disorder. For their analysis, the researchers only tested women of European descent. The U.S. researchers compared their findings to data from 3 different studies in Finland, Denmark, and Norway. Everything pointed to the same 6 genes. The next step is to expand the research to include women from other races and ethnic origins. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
That's our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. You can read the latest about the effects of Tropical Storm Irma. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Despite the best efforts of the United Nations Security Council over the past 24 years, the North Korean nuclear program is more advanced and more dangerous than ever, warned the U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations, Ambassador Nikki Haley. North Korea fires missiles over Japanese airspace. They have ICBM capabilities and now claim to have tested a hydrogen bomb. Enough is enough, said Ambassador Haley. We have taken an incremental approach, and despite the best of intentions, it has not worked. Each time the international community has engaged in direct and multilateral talks with the North Korean regime, it has failed to achieve the denuclearization of the rogue state. The time for half measures in the Security Council is over, said Ambassador Haley. The time has come to exhaust all of our diplomatic means before it's too late. We must now adopt the strongest possible measures, she urged. Kim Jong-un's abusive use of missiles and his nuclear threats show that he is begging for war, said Ambassador Haley. But war, she stressed, is never something the United States wants. At the same time, the United States' patience is not unlimited. We will defend our allies and our territory, she vowed. Ambassador Haley urged fellow Security Council members to exhaust all diplomatic means to end this crisis. Only the strongest sanctions will enable us to resolve this problem through diplomacy, she noted. We have kicked the can down the road long enough. There is no more road left. The United States will look beyond the UN at every country that does business with North Korea as a country that is giving aid to their reckless and dangerous nuclear intentions. The stakes could not be higher. The urgency is now, said Ambassador Haley. 24 years of half measures and failed talks is enough.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.